Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 18th of September 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Normally we would be live, and normally we would have Dennis Wise with us. Unfortunately, Dennis is still ill, but he does send his love to his listeners, and hopefully he will be well again soon and back with us on the show. Thomas Goodrich was going to be here. He's unable to make it. Hopefully he will be back next week, but we're very, very pleased that he was actually able to do the show with us for 4 weeks. I mean, it's quite a lot of work to do this every Friday and put the work into the research for it. So we're very, very grateful to Thomas for doing that. But we do have another special guest with us tonight, somebody who has been listening to the show probably since the beginning. I think he's certainly been around in the chat room all that time. Okama10, he goes by in the chat room, and he also uses the name Pelasgian because he did do a series of narrations for us, which you can find at the radioalbion.com site, called Pelasgian Narrations, that were about feminism in Bulgaria in the 1940s and 30s. And that's because he's Bulgarian, and he's going to come on the show tonight to talk a little bit to us about Bulgarian history, because we're not told exactly the truth in Wikipedia. There are some slurs against Bulgaria that I'm hoping we can clear up tonight. And I'm very, very pleased to have him here anyway. So I'll introduce Pelasgian here. Pelasgian, thank you very much for coming on the show. How are you doing today?
Hello, Sven. Hello, listeners. Well, to be honest, I'm a bit nervous. Actually, a lot nervous. And I'm kind of tired because I had to work at the night. But overall, I think we can do it.
Excellent. Good man. I even get nervous. I do shows every day and I still find myself getting nervous, especially on the live ones. And at least we're not live tonight. But Bulgaria really, really interests me because it's a modern country. It's a part of Europe, and yet it still has loads of rustic traditions. It has mountains. It has a sea there. It has a rural population. It has an urban population. It's quite close to the Near East, and it has a really, really long history. I was looking at Wikipedia today, and it seems like the earliest evidence of European civilization is actually in Bulgaria, with this culture called the Varna culture. And the Thracians were there, and I know you're interested in the Thracian history. And then Wikipedia tries to say that for some reason these peoples just disappeared, and Slavs came in, and then Turks came in, and it sort of gives this impression that Bulgaria is peopled by Turks, and it is certainly not peopled by Turks. You can look on Google Images, and you can see that Bulgarians they're as white as the rest of Europe. They look whiter to me than some Greeks that I've seen on Google Images. So that's one thing that I think we should really try to tackle, is this idea that Bulgaria is Turkish, when really it seems to me as if Bulgaria has a really interesting history. And also there was the Greater Bulgaria as well. It used to be a huge country, and you used to have a massive empire. I'm really fascinated by all this, so I'm not sure where you want to start with that. You could start with the Thracians, or you could start with this Turkish slur. Where do you want to begin?
Well, actually, they kind of can start at the same point, maybe, because one of the arguments that these people who say that Bulgarians are Turkic people basically use this idea that all of a sudden the Thracians just at, I can't remember the century, but basically in this early Middle Ages, late antiquity, just disappeared. This these rations, or actually were reduced to very small numbers. So the reason I'm interested in Thracians is mainly because I support the idea that the Bulgarians are actually not Turkic people, but Thracians. And
well, that makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. That does make sense to me, because why would these Thracian people just disappear? And Wikipedia says that Slavs came in and took over, and then Turks came in and took over, and Turks called it Bulgaria. They tried to say that the word Bulgaria comes from a Turkish word to mean mixed, and that doesn't make sense to me, because you had this great Bulgarian Empire, and there was Greater Bulgaria that also included Russia. So what was going on there, do you think?
Well, how should I put it? Actually, the three components of what will be the Middle Ages Bulgaria is, again, Thracians, Slavs, so-called Slavs, and Old Bulgarians. And the Turkic origin of these Old Bulgarians is actually the big dispute, or what I think is the false or the lies. Basically, they assume that these old Bulgarians are Turkic because of around the 10th or the 9th century Roman historian. By Roman, I actually want to clarify that the Byzantine people and the Byzantine Empire actually never existed in the name Byzantine. It was Roman. These people actually saw themselves as Roman and as Romans. So, So the most of our history actually comes from, not from our own scribes, but from these Roman historians. Not because there weren't any historians, Bulgarians, but after the Ottoman invasion, a lot of documents, they were destroyed. And this is one of the reasons why, for example, There are these speculations about the origin, the Turkic origin. About the Greater Bulgaria, that country, actually, they say that its founder was Khan. Actually, the title of these old Bulgarian noblemen were Khan. And one of the speculation is that this Khan is actually the Mongol or Turkic word Khan, like Chinggis Khan. And however, this is, should I say, actually historians' misconceptions that stem out of this assumption by these late Roman or Byzantinian historians that actually there was a propaganda at that time to around the 10th, 9th century to basically destroy the identity of Bulgarians. It was an attempt. So these historians, modern day historians, looked at this title actually from, what was it? I think it was some stone carvings in a pillar somewhere. So, the name is engraved in that stone pillar was Kanas, and the phrase was Kanas Ubigi, which they translate as ruler by God or in God's name, something like that. And they say that this Kanas is actually a Hellenized version of the Turkic title Khan, like Genghis Khan. And but actually they neglect that there is actually a word for Thracian noblemen, I think actually Thracian rulers, that is actually very close to this Kanes. I think it was Kaneas, which actually basically means king for the Thracians, which kind of shows that there is there's this Thracian again connection with the Bulgarians in that using the title as evidence for some kind of Turkic origin is how should I say it? Insufficient, let's say.
It sounds, also, sounds a there bit flaky, doesn't it? Just something you say there. You know, these words are all interlinked, aren't they? Khan, König, King, Tsar, Caesar. They all have the same Indo-European root. And the Genghis Khan and the Mongol horde, they were really the Mughal horde, the Megalos. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson has done a lot of work into this, showing that they were white. They were the remains of the Sarmatians, I believe, the remains of the Greater Bulgaria or Old Russia. They were the remains of that. That's why there's never been any Mongolian bodies found. There's no history of this happening in China. There's no part of Chinese history that talks about a great invading army that invaded Europe. It's very recently that in Mongolia they put up this statue of Genghis Khan. But that's just based on our understanding of it, because he shows that rather than being the Mongols, they were the Mughals, they were the Megalos, which meant huge, because they were this huge horde. So even if the word does originate with the word that they used, that doesn't show that these people were in any way Turkish like the Turks are today. And also, when you think about Turkey, we call it Turkey, but it's only been called Turkey for the last 70 or 80 years. It used to be Asia Minor, and it used to be filled with white people. You used to have Troy there, you used to have Cilicia there, I forget the name of the other part of it, Cappadocia, and it was a center of Aryan civilizations for centuries, for millennia. So to say that Greater Bulgaria was run by these Turkmen, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
That might be it. I'm not sure, but to modern historians, you know, when you say Mongol, you say they assume you're talking about Asiatic people, like Turkic, or, you know, Turks are actually mixed between white and Asiatics. East Asians. That's, and visually they actually have that facial structure, like the flatter nose. But yeah. Modern historians believe that these Mongols were Asiatic also. Or so if they are, Bulgarians have that title, therefore, like Genghis Khan, therefore, you know, there's some kind of mixed Turkic Asiatic thing. But another interesting thing is that actually Greater Bulgaria is exactly where Scythia was, and it's interesting how in one period of history the Romans referred to that area as Scythia, and the people there Scythians, and actually in just I haven't looked exactly the time period, but maybe in 100 or 200 years, or maybe 300 years, all of a sudden that they start speaking about Bulgarians. But what's interesting is also that this idea that Bulgarians are not native to Europe or cannot be connected to any native European people comes after the 10th, the 9th century, where this propaganda actually starts. Before that, all Roman historians mainly say link these old Bulgarians, and actually the Bulgarians in Bulgaria, because after the formation, the official admission of the Roman Empire of the existence of such a state, because before then it was just they regarded as some kind of bands doing some raids and so forth. And in that period before that 10th, 9th century, before this propaganda started, all Roman historians connected the Bulgarians with gods, mainly gods, some with Getae, Scythians a lot. Often they relate, they say that Bulgarians, Scythians, what else? Yeah, there is actually, I pulled up a document I actually once sent you of this article that has the, how should I say it? The statement of Ioannis Malalai in his Chronographia, where he actually connects the Bulgarians with Achilles, of all people. And I will just read it. He writes, "And so, the before-mentioned Achilles went away along with the Arthridians and was bringing his own army of 3,000 people that at that time were called Myrmidons and now Bulgarians." And yeah, basically that was the theme of all Roman historians or Byzantine historians, that Bulgarians were not this foreign element, but in fact some of these ancient native tribes. Actually, it was interesting I think it was a few months ago, I was watching a lot of these, there were officials, how should I say it, debates among historians on various topics of our history. And sparked my interest was that one of the historians said that the Romans never actually looked at Bulgarians as, a foreigners before that, again, that period to the 9th, 10th century, and actually regarded Bulgarians as rebels, that they were part of the empire, but just rebelled, they wanted freedom.
Well, it sounds like you're linking the Bulgarians with the Scythians and the Massagetae and the Goths. The Massagetae is like Scythian, and also the Getae bit is the Gutae, the Goth bit. So they're all the similar people that were in that area of Scythia. So why do you think Roman historians were trying to minimize the Bulgarians? Because I know the Ottomans tried to minimize the Bulgarians and tried to do away with their identity once the Ottomans took over, because the Bulgarians remained Christian. They refused to become Muslims, and they retained their national identity under a lot of pressure from these Ottomans. But that was in the 12th century. So you're saying that the Roman historians in the 9th and the 10th century, they were trying to minimize the Bulgarians and try to say that they were a foreign people. What do you think were the reasons for that propaganda?
Well, the reasons, I think, is simply assimilation. If you have an identity that is different from the empire, the Byzantine, I will say Byzantine, but yeah, from the empire, you'll never, how should I say, stay still. You always strive for freedom. And the Ottomans I don't think they really wanted to destroy the identity. They just wanted Bulgarians to be Muslim, while the Roman Empire wanted them to stop seeing themselves as descendants of these ancient Thracians, you know, Pelasgians, Dacians, because Dacia or Dacia, I don't know how exactly to pronounce it.
Dacian, I would pronounce it as Dacian.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, basically, the first Bulgarian kingdom is in Dacia. So, no doubt there were Dacians there. And yeah, I think that the whole concept was assimilation. And actually, that coincides with the first ever, because often people say that the Byzantine Empire was a Greek empire, because the people there were Greeks, and no, they spoke Greek, of course, they had a Greek civilization, but the assumption is that it's only Greeks. The thing is that the empire was, I wouldn't say multicultural, yeah, at one point it was multicultural, multi-religious, but the Greeks sat on the Roman throne only after basically the 9th and 10th century. And this coincides, this Greek ascending to power basically coincides with this idea of destroying the national identity. And later during the Ottoman times, it wouldn't be the Ottomans that will try to destroy the identity of Bulgarians. It will be these, how should I say it, Greek, maybe fanatics, but I don't know. It was common among Greeks to, the common Greeks actually mocked Bulgarians and tried to, instill in them the idea that they have no history, that they are just nomads, that they shouldn't be there, and so on and so forth. And the monks actually, because a lot of historical books actually were saved in the monasteries, and the Greeks slow. Now, they were, it's not really official thing, but some of our freedom fighters from the, I think it was 19th century, spoke about this, that Greek clerks are slowly taking over Bulgarian monasteries and destroying the most, some of the literature, I mean the historical accounts.
Would this be because they wanted to take territory? Greeks wanted to take territory, didn't want the Bulgarians to have it.
Well, I think they just wanted to assimilate, because if you assimilate, if you change, because during the Ottoman times, actually, this was very successful, as there were many Bulgarians who acted like Greeks. They spoke Greek, they presented themselves as Greeks and so forth. And I guess the idea was assimilation. If they think they're Greeks, you know, they would welcome any change of territory.
Right, right. So what happened when the Ottomans took over? Because there must have been a lot of pressure for the Bulgarians to become Muslims, and they didn't. They remained Christians, and they remained separate. They didn't interbreed with the Ottomans, and it was like that for hundreds of years until they got together with Russia and I think Austria and other forces from within Europe. To take back the land and say, well, look, this is for the Bulgarians. And the Ottomans eventually agreed and pulled out and gave you back your land. But you managed to retain your Europeanness right the way throughout that, and also held on to Christianity, which is, it's quite an incredible thing, the pressure that your people must have been under in order to do that. Do you want to talk a bit about that and the time under the Ottomans?
Well, yeah, actually the pressure was on all Christian lands. But they say that after the first or the second century, this pressure for Islamizing, or how should I say it, converting Christians to Islam was actually relieved more from the Greeks and the Serbs and more centered towards Bulgarians. And what can I say? It wasn't nice. There were at first there were things like forceful Islamization, like saying that they will kill you. Probably a lot of people said, "Well, okay, I will die in the name of faith." But when they say, "Okay, we'll kill you if you don't convert, we'll kill you, your children or your son or whatever," and people. A lot of people actually resisted, and there were a lot of killings at one point, but some people did convert. And I was actually talking with a person about this the other day, and he actually said that the Ottoman Empire actually didn't benefit from actually killing everyone, because at one point they just saw that Bulgarians won't convert. Not only Bulgarians, but all other Christians. And it was unprofitable for them to just annihilate everyone. So they allowed them to be Christian, but forced, basically they were slaves in some form. They have to pay high taxes. They had no rights. Yeah. Actually, they were treated a lot like Afro-Americans assumed they were treated in America. Yeah, actually even worse, because you know, in America, the Americans actually cared for their slaves, while in the Ottoman Empire, slaves were actually called Geur, I think it was, which may I think it was Raya, which meant cattle. So are they alive, are they dead? You know, it didn't matter that much.
And what about the blood tax? When did the blood tax come in? When the Ottomans would take a male child from every family and then train them up to be assassins as janissaries? When did that happen?
Well, the blood tax started, I think, again, I'm not a historian or not a hobbyist historian. These are just basic knowledge. Somewhat basic knowledge, but I think that the blood tax started from the get-go, because the Ottoman Empire needed soldiers, especially the janissaries. And that thing lasted until the janissaries were, how should I say, a thing, when they were a strong force. Which means that basically all over the period, actually there was there's a holiday here in called Petliovden, or the Cock Day, which you know, today is usurped by homosexuals to celebrate themselves. But back then, actually, it was a day when I think the Ottomans were coming for the firstborn child. So, and they mark with blood the houses they have already been. So the Bulgarians would actually slaughter a chicken, or mainly a cock, and splatter the blood on the door to mark as if, you know, to fool the Ottomans that their child has been taken. Now, how successful was this, and is this just a legend or a myth? I don't know, but I know that the memory of this actually probably was very strong in Bulgarians, because eventually they turned it into a celebration of male children.
Celebration of the ones that managed to escape it by putting the blood on there.
And you firstborn.
And the Bulgarians that did convert to Islam, they still speak Turkish. I think I see you got 10% of the country, I think, are Muslims. And were they encouraged to move to Turkey once Bulgaria got her lands back? Were they encouraged to move back to the Ottomans? What happened there to the Bulgarians that had converted to Islam once you got your country back?
Well, actually, I think that exactly the Bulgarians, that actually the Turkic population in Bulgaria, more likely to be, actually not more likely, but probably the descendants of these Bulgarian Muslims, because now during the Ottoman period there were a lot of areas with pure Ottoman or Turkic population. After the liberation, I couldn't say all of them, because I think that somewhere was written that all of them, I mean not most of them, but all of them, I saw somewhere that were, how should I say, exported, migrated back to Turkey. And so probably the ones that remained were basically Bulgarian Muslims. However, today they, how should I say it, because being a Muslim is, they are quite closed societies, and they don't educate their children. I mean, some do, actually, but probably most of them didn't, and therefore did the education that these people are not Turkic, they're not Ottomans, they're not actually Muslims by their own will, actually didn't reach them. And so today they see themselves as Some see themselves as Bulgarians, but the majority see themselves as Turkic people, and actually side with pro-Turkic parties, and they serve like how should I say it? What?
Third column, fifth column,
fifth column.
I mean, this sort of shows us, isn't it, that if you, when you have Muslims in your country and you have people from your nation that convert to Islam, their loyalties change, and their loyalties change from being to your nation to the Islamic nations and to part of the Ummah and the greater Islamic world. So you have a group of people there who are ethnically Bulgarian, but they have a religion which is not Christianity, and therefore their political loyalties are to Turkey. And they do what, and they will vote in the best interests of Turkey rather than the best interests of the Bulgarians. Would that be a good way to explain it?
Yeah. Pretty much that's how things go. And the absurdity is that even though some of them might know the Bulgarian, they still speak Turkic language because I guess it's more closer to their religion. So, yeah, I think that it's not a good thing to have Muslims. Even if they're the same race, they still have allegiance to Muslims, and Muslims are, Islam sees Christians, for example, or actually everybody else as people. They either have to convert or... Yeah, you know, they either convert or kill. So having that group in your own country is basically means that you have traitors.
And they speak Turkish as well. They don't. Some of them don't even bother to speak Bulgarian. They just speak Turkish.
Actually, they know Bulgarian, but you can totally tell that they speak it as a second language. And amongst themselves, they talk Turkic.
And what about the gypsies as well? Because you've got, I think you may have the largest gypsy population in Europe. I may be wrong there. You've got a large population of gypsies in
I think Romania is the largest.
Right.
And we are probably the second.
Well, how did that happen? How did that happen? Where did they come from? And what are they all doing in Bulgaria? Have there always been this large number of gypsies there? What are they like? What are they like as a minority in the country?
Well, where they came from? Well, they came from Pakistan, I think. Maybe someone shared me this book that of this British explorer, who actually lived among gypsies in Pakistan and found that, that there is their origin. Now, they came into Bulgaria thanks to the Ottomans. Ottomans... took them as soldiers, and later gave them lands, and they weren't privileged, but this is how they came into. I think this is how official historians assume they came with the Ottomans.
So because they were in the Punjab. And they would, I guess, they would have been, but weren't they Christian? Don't the gypsies claim to be Christian rather than Muslim? Or do these gypsies are they Muslim? These gypsies?
Actually, gypsies will claim their whatever religion gives them more money. They obviously have their own religion or some kind of their own religious belief, but when. A lot of people say that after the fall of communism, you have this from America, mainly. These Christians, I can't remember what their name was.
Evangelical?
Yeah, evangelicals, exactly. And you have a lot of evangelical missionaries that actually went to these gypsies and started, quote-unquote, preaching, but actually they were offering them money for... being part of the church, which actually led to many of them converting to Christianity. And nowadays, these evangelicals aren't that strong, I guess. And I heard that the Arab Emirates actually sends a lot of funds for Islam missionaries into these communities, the Gypsy communities. And actually, right the town next to me, I often see Gypsies wearing these, you know, the bag, the full-on ninja suit.
Muslim gear, wearing the Muslim clothes. Do the people keep themselves separate then? Do the Bulgarians marry the Bulgarians and the Bulgarian Muslims marry the Bulgarian Muslims and the Gypsies marry the Gypsies? Is there a sense of ethnic solidarity between these groups, or is there an overlap between them? Do you get Bulgarians breeding with Gypsies and like sort of half Gypsy children around? How does that work?
Well, I think up to the Second World War, after the communists took over, and after liberalism took over, after communism fell, I think then you had these mixed marriages. But before that, there were just Bulgarian Muslims were kind of isolated as a group overall. Bulgarian Christians also isolated, which were the majority of the country, but they also separated themselves in these. They will marry other Bulgarians, and the Gypsies, of course, they will marry other Gypsies. But Gypsies never that ethnocentric. I mean that, for example, there are a lot of stories of Gypsies stealing children. That's kind of they say that it's a slander of Bulgarians because they're racist. But it's kind of a folk myth that, don't allow your children to walk around freely because the Gypsies will snatch them. But, you know, this was once before the fall of this this ethnocentric worldview.
Well, there's no smoke without fire, is there? I mean, if you've got this folk myth, I think that's in most countries. There's a folk myth like that about Gypsies stealing children. Oh, what was it like in after the war? Because I think in the First World War and the Second World War, Bulgaria sided with Germany. And there was nationalist movements in Bulgaria. There was a national socialist movement in World War II. And then unfortunately, at the end of the war, the Soviets took over. So do you know much about those times, the recent history, Second World War and under the Soviet Union?
Yeah, First World War was actually, there are a lot of, military victories, like something to take pride in. But it was devastating, as I think for all of Europe. The Second World War, not so much, because we didn't, we were Hitler's ally, but we didn't, except maybe his campaign in Greece. Other than that, we didn't participate. There were desires from the Bulgarian legionaries, which were considered to be something like national socialist or fascist, although the leader didn't agree on everything with Hitler. But these people, their stories that they argued to send soldiers to the Eastern Front. But eventually, the leader said, well, the Tsar is the ultimate ruler. He will say if we should go or not. And so nothing was done. But actually, in that period, we were in very bad shape. Actually, we lost a lot of population from the liberation in the late 19th century all the way to the Second World War. We were like constant war after 20 years or so. So, like, you had the liberation, you had the, I think the unification might have, yeah, no, no, the unification didn't happen. But then you had the First Balkan War, the Second Balkan War, the First World War, and all of these just decimated the population. So I guess from a population standpoint, we just couldn't afford to lose more people. So in the Second World War, we didn't participate, let's say, as Romania that gave so many legionnaires. When the Soviets came, basically, you can say it was like everywhere. I mean, nationalists were hunted. They were trialed in the so-called People's Court. But from what I hear, for example, in Romania, I think that actually we came out of it. Let's say the Jews weren't so angry at us, because I think that often we, when we speak about that period, you know, it's allowed to take pride in the king's decision to save the Jews, basically not send the Bulgarian Jews into the German camps. So I think that that actually was very smart of him, because I think at that time, it was smart for us Bulgarians. But at that time, I think that he was seeing that Germany won't win the war. I think that was after America joined the war. So probably he saw, as they say, the writing on the wall, and and decided to not send the Jews. And I think afterwards, it was easier for us to, how should I say, they were not so aggressive in killings and so forth. There were death camps. There were death camps. And a lot of people, especially mainly nationalists, died and suffered there.
So this was the Soviets then. They didn't treat you so badly, the Soviets, because your king didn't send the Jews to the work camps.
I think that's the reason.
Right. I mean, again, that shows this link between Judaism and the Soviets, doesn't it? And communism.
Yeah, I think the king knew exactly well. Maybe he didn't want. Maybe there was a selfish act. Maybe he didn't want to have the fate of the Romanovs. No doubt he knew who did it and why he did it. And maybe he thought that, if I save the Jews, I will save my family. Although in the end, he was killed by a communist, I think.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask you that. What happened to the king? Do you still have a royal family there then? Or did they just do away with the monarchy entirely?
No, we do have a royal family, but how should I say, they're not, they're very Judaized, I think. They don't care about the people. But from the get-go, the royal family in Bulgaria was not Bulgarian by blood. It was German. But still, the Bulgarian king at that time, the Second World War, was actually, let's say, he saw himself as a king of these people, and it didn't matter to him that he was not of them. And everybody loved them. Everybody, I mean, the average people, you know, inside there were like liberals who were like, we don't want him. We don't want monarchy in any form and so forth. We want a republic. But yeah, the royal family still exists, but they're not, how should I say it? We're better without them, let's say.
Right. Well, but Bulgaria is a republic now, isn't it? And
it's a kind of a aftermath of the communist regime, which declared it to be a republic.
And what happened under the Soviets? Was there any rising up against them at all? Was there any attempts to throw off the Soviet yoke before the Iron Curtain fell?
I don't think so. I think, as I mean that there was a very strong influence, and being a defeated nation, we couldn't do anything, and we didn't have the population, and everybody who had national sentiments was sent to the camp. So basically, you had this obedient population left. But from what I understand, probably about 20 years after the Iron Curtain, before the Iron Curtain fell, or the fall of communism, they were living in some kind of odd system that was, maybe you can describe it as Nazbol. There was very strong nationalistic, patriotic sense. It was, you know, the idea about Bulgarian identity as different from everybody else was very strong. There were a lot of social programs for, basically you had national socialism in everything but except in name. And of course with the anti-fascist laws, but the majority of the programs in this late communist state was very national socialist. And people, even today, are very attached to it. The older people are very attached to this, how should I say, Nazbo state. I can define it only like this.
So they look with nostalgia then for the last 20 years before the fall of communism, because it wasn't so bad in Bulgaria at that time then. So they still sort of approve of communism. Do they wish that that communism hadn't come to an end then? Do they think that it was better than now?
Many of them regret because I don't know, maybe it's something like, you know, you're attached to the things that when you were young, and maybe, but they didn't have it bad. But it's like everywhere. I mean, I talked to a Polish person. He's in no way a nationalist, but he said that there is the same sentiment there, that older people are, I guess, people that are now in their 50s, 60s and above, are very nostalgic of the Soviet regime. And in Russia, we know that Putin today actually harps on this communist sentiment of the old regime.
Well, the communists were the second great power, weren't they? You had America, Britain, you had NATO, and then you had the Soviet bloc, the USSR. It was a huge part of the world. It was an empire. So I guess they look back at being part of a powerful empire at that time and tend to gloss over the negative sides of it. Was there population removal during the time when you had the Soviets there? Did they move Russians in, or did they move Bulgarians out to any other part of the empire? Because I know there was a lot of population removal that went on with the Soviets. So they like to move people out from one country and move them into another. I mean, in particular in Latvia, there's a very large Russian population there because they moved all the Latvians out and moved all the Russians in. So do you have a large Russian population in Bulgaria, or were you sort of left to run things under Bulgarians as part of the Soviet?
I don't think there are any large movements that I know of, but it was because Bulgaria was not directly part of the Soviet Union. It was more like a satellite state or something like that, and you had maybe things were more loose in Bulgaria. So probably no, probably, but I mean, I often hear and see a lot of people that actually are descendant of Russians. So I would assume that some Russians managed to, how should I say, quote unquote escape, because I don't think it was actually an escape, but probably they managed to move to Bulgaria, marry a Bulgarian, get a Bulgarian citizen. And yeah, we have, I wouldn't say a lot, there were a decent amount of Russians, but no mass migrations. And I think the Bulgarians were left mainly to themselves and mainly to the gypsies, because I think that that was kind of our Achilles heel, maybe, the gypsies, even though when, you know, I was young when it fell. I was probably 4 years old when the regime fell, and I still remember Bulgarians being very, how should I say, racist towards gypsies. But I see a lot of mixed race Bulgarians with gypsies among the people from that era. And of course in today, but the start maybe was at that time. And also one of the, how should I say, the pain in every Bulgarian's heart is the invention of the, probably a lot of people, especially Macedonians, will feel offended this, but it's proven actually there was the documentary on mainstream TV that spoke about this, that the Stalin's regime and the communist regime actually invented the whole idea of Macedonia as a modern state. They're actually declassified communist documents speaking of the steps they would do to basically separate Macedonians from Bulgarians. So in terms of population modification, if we say it like that, I think these were the main tools they used.
So just run this past me again then. So Macedonia used to be a part of Bulgaria, and they split that off and said, oh, this is a new country now. This is Macedonia. Is that what you're saying?
Well, even after all the way from the Ottoman Empire to all the way to the communist, the arrival of the communists, let's say the majority of the people saw themselves as Bulgarians in Macedonia. Now, there were some kind of propaganda, small, that, Macedonians aren't actually Bulgarian and so forth, but, you know, people would, let's say that the majority belief was that you will get killed if you say that you're not Bulgarian. And this was not in no way Bulgarian propaganda in these lands, but it was actually native people who believed this. And, genetic research on the people in Macedonia actually proves that they were right thinking like this. But and even the Balkan Wars, the First World War, even the Second World War, one of the aim of the Bulgarian government was actually, in their words, liberating Macedonia. Up to the, until the communists came, they Bulgarians wanted, saw Macedonia. Even today, we believe that Macedonians are the same as us. But today, because of this communist propaganda for, what is it now, their third or fourth generation, they actually are very aggressive towards Bulgarians. They believe they're separate from us and so forth and so on. Even though they speak like the same language, have the same culture, have the same history.
Right, right. Because Macedonia didn't exist for years. I mean, you've got Alexander the Great. He came from Macedonia, and that was, thousands of years ago. And now you've got this part calling itself Macedonia as if it's the old country of Macedonia. And it was really just a region, isn't it?
I think that the people there are actually could be related to these ancient Macedonians, but as a country, as a separate, let's say that during the Middle Ages, Macedonia was part of Bulgaria for a very long time. And these people actually saw themselves as Bulgarians until the Ottomans and during the Ottoman slavery period.
Well, what's the politics like now then in Bulgaria? Because I noticed that there's riots that have been going on. There's accusations of corruption. Wikipedia says that Bulgaria is one of the most corrupt countries in Europe, and there are big protests that are going on at the moment. And I think you may have shown me a link to some of them recently, and I was quite taken aback by the fact that, you know, most of the people there seem to be white. There didn't seem to be many people of color there, like you would see in the multicultural city centers in the rest of Europe. It did seem to be that it was white people that were rioting there. So what's currently happening politically over there? What's going on? Why are the people upset? Why are they protesting?
Well, I think they're protesting in a way that it's justified. Yes, you could say that we have the most corrupt government because the EU sends us a lot of money and the government kind of distributes it among close people, and that the protesters' main objection, actually the main drive, is because they don't want this Bulgarian government to continue to exist, because they see it as I actually support them, but I think there is a lot of leftists. Actually, you see them, Antifa, homosexuals from here and there, which is really odd, because you can see that these leftists, I wouldn't say they're middle class, because there's no such thing as middle class in Bulgaria, but there are these leftists that use basically nationalistic slogans like "in the name of Bulgaria for our children," etc., etc. So, yeah. I think the riots are justified, but kind of pointless. I think that there is a lot of communist, leftist drive behind this, because how should I say it? Because it's kind of pointless, because just in 1 or 2 months there will be elections. So, you know, if you want to change the government, you just, according to their beliefs, that the democracy is the way the world will be better, they should just vote this government out and vote their own people.
So it's students then, really? I guess that's what you mean, if you haven't really got a middle class there, that it's student types that are doing the rioting.
Well, kind of students. I think the core that even when, because people have to go to work in the end of the day, but the people who could actually work and protest were actually these middle-class IT people who can, you know, move around with their laptops and stuff like that. And you can see a lot of those in the... students, a lot of students, yes. Because they have been... Well, the propaganda is that... we are not a European country. I wouldn't say we're not, but I mean, we still have a lot to catch up. And
what are the universities like there? Are they teaching gender studies and teaching Bulgarians to hate themselves like in the rest of the white world?
I don't think so. I mean, I was in university like 10 years ago. I don't know how things are now. But I don't think there were gender studies. When I was in university, there was no. Today, I think that these are a bit extreme for us. You have to be absolute leftist to believe in these. Actually, even Antifa, the local, let's say the Bulgarian branch, is actually so few people that they have to bus in people from neighboring countries, especially Greece, in order to form some kind of counter-protest to, let's say, a nationalist protest. So, I don't think there's... There is this gender or Yeah, I don't think we have it as bad as the West. But there is definitely a leftist propaganda mainly revolving around the notion that, well, these leftist countries like Western Europe, look at how good they have it. Look at their values. We should adopt them if we want to be a civilized nation. Yeah, I think that's the main drive in universities.
So the Bulgarians are really quite a conservative minded then, would you say? Quite traditionalist minded, and they don't really go in for the transvesticism and gender studies and all that sort of thing.
I wouldn't call them traditional minded, especially today, but yeah, I think there is kind of in the back of every Bulgarian's head, like that the average Bulgarian doesn't have this liberal mindset of the Western European. I wouldn't say that they're traditionalist and all of these things more, but when it comes to homosexuality, I think it's not like we don't have homosexuals, we don't have promoters of homosexuality, even on TV. We're kind of tolerant to this in society, but as well as being tolerant, there is like under the surface intolerance of these. And if these people actually cross the line of becoming more more visible and demanding more rights and like things we see in Western Europe, the population, the average person just rises in disapproval.
Do you have gay marriage there?
No, I don't think so. I at least I haven't heard of any.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, finally, just what's the nationalist scene like there? Do you have a civic nationalist political party at all? Do you have an ethno-nationalist grouping at all? Is there any nationalist movement there that you're aware of?
Yeah, there are several nationalist movements. Civic nationalist mainly because I think having a more ethno-nationalist will brand you as fascist and Nazi. And unlike America, probably, maybe not Britain, but yeah, unlike America, for example, you cannot have pro-fascist, pro-national socialist party. I mean, you can hold these views, but you forming any type of explicit nationalist, ethno-nationalist organization will kind of get you in jail. But there are a lot of, how should I say, civic nationalists who are basically, yeah, in helping, shaking hands with Jews and not, they will defend to some extent the Bulgarian, how should I say, interests. They will defend them, but overall, they wouldn't be explicitly ethno-nationalist. They will say that the civic nationalist, that everyone is a Bulgarian as long as he speaks the Bulgarian language, follows the culture, and so forth and so on.
But they're proud of their Bulgarian culture, then, and they promote it, and they have a sense of pride in being Bulgarian.
Yeah. And there is some explicitly national socialist groups, but they're very under the radar. And some say that they're infiltrated by, the Secret Service, so like don't get involved with them, but they are there. Although I think that that's my personal critique towards like the largest one is like I don't think they're trying to become, how should I say, not more popular, but kind of spread the ideas. They are just like, I feel like they're a black hole. I can say so, like they just suck up nationalists, and once they're there, I don't know what they're doing, but they're doing nothing to like spread the message, if you like.
Well, just one final thing. Do you have Holocaust denial laws there? Have you got laws to prevent looking into what happened in the Second World War, or do you still have a sense of free speech there?
I haven't looked into this, but I don't think that we would not have one, because, you know, we had when it comes to the Second World War and these everything related to it, we basically have mainly the remaining Soviet laws, like I'm not sure anti-Semitism, but yeah, definitely anti-Holocaust laws. Questioning the Holocaust maybe is not. I haven't seen anyone do it publicly. Let's say it like this.
So people are aware of what the history is. It's yeah, well, it's been really interesting hearing all this, learning about all this. It's very, very far away from Britain, Bulgaria, right on the edges of the European Union, and you know, you don't often hear from many Bulgarians. So yeah, that's been fascinating, Pelagian. Thank you very much for coming on today, and thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you, and of course we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.